Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman, along with rock expert Frank Ost. Frankie, how are you? Welcome to December.
It's great to be in December.
Yeah, boy. A little chill in the air.
We forget back in the 90-degree days how it is to be in winter.
Like 6 months ago, boy, I wish it was cool again.
Yeah,
we got our wish, didn't we? Today in rock history, December 5th. 1965, the Beatles played in their hometown of Liverpool for the final time.
Really? Didn't know that.
1968, an actual banquet to celebrate the release of the Stones' new album, Beggar's Banquet, came to an abrupt ending when a pie-throwing fight broke out amongst the guests.
Rock and roll.
1980, John Lennon gave his last interview. This was just days before his tragic death.
That's
right. He called his Aunt Mimi, saying he was homesick for England and was planning a trip back overseas. 1993, Doug Hopkins, ex-lead guitarist of Gin Blossoms, committed suicide in Arizona, just 32 years old. He'd been fired from the group a year earlier for his excessive drinking habit.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They had some good stuff in the 90s, didn't
they?
Sure
did, yeah,
for a while there. Elton John appeared on the NBC comedy show Will and Grace in 2002. Never a big Will and Grace fan. Got it. I just wasn't a big fan of. By then, I had really moved on from NBC's must-see TV and Friends. And
yeah, Martha liked it. I remember watching it with her, but it was never a big thing for me.
Yeah, me either. 2012, jazz legend Dave Brubeck, Take Five, 1961, died just a day before his 92nd birthday. His planned birthday celebration instead became a memorial tribute celebration.
Oh, okay.
2015, Ringo Starr's personal copy of the White Album numbered 000-000-1 was auctioned off, fetching a world record of $790,000.
Wow, that's just crazy. It's almost $1 million
for a record.
Do you
think you could get him to sign the cover?
Maybe.
Just don't have him personalize it or it loses a lot of the value. 1 year ago, 2021, it's a sad day for rock and roll, Frankie. The Billboard 200 year-end album chart showed no new rock records for the year. Now, it had compilations and other rock albums like Back in Black and Rumors and Nevermind and stuff. No new rock albums on the entire year-end.
I didn't realize that. Of course, I realized for years that rock is no longer, obviously, the choice of the younger generation.
No, that's for sure. It's too bad. No other albums, Rumors, Queen's Greatest Hits, Journey's Greatest, and the compilation stuff. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
Birthdays, the 8th President of the United States, one of your favorites, Martin Van Buren.
And who doesn't love Marty?
He was born in the state in 1782. Walt Disney, 1901. What would the world be? Where would families go without Disney World or Disneyland, Frankie?
Disneyland, all the movies, the animation. It would be hard to come up with somebody who affected the world in a positive way, not negative way, but in a positive way in the 20th century any more than Walt Disney.
He was a trailblazer for many ways. His middle name, Elias.
Yeah, I think I knew that.
Little Richard was born on this date in 1932, born Richard Wayne Pennyman. Mm-hmm. He died just a couple years ago, Frankie.
That's right.
J.J. Cale, 1938.
Yeah.
Jim Messina turned 75 today, and Goo Goo Dolls' John Resnick is 57 today.
Wow, when the Goo Goo Dolls are in their late 50s, you know you're getting old. I remember when they were the new group on the block.
The new Goo Dolls? So before we get started on the show, Frank and I are sad to hear of the passing of Christy McVie. She was 79 years old. She joined Fleetwood Mac in 1970 and wrote some of their biggest hits like Don't Stop and You Make Love and Fun, many, many others. Fleetwood Mac hadn't toured for a few years, probably because of COVID and other issues, but she died peacefully in her sleep last Tuesday.
Thank you.
soon-to-be hits. I like this category, Frankie. December 5th, 1971, as coming in number 87 this week, was Looking for a Love, Jay Giles.
Ooh, that's a great one. And, of course, it wasn't a big hit, but just for them to be on the charts was nice.
Yeah, it was long before Centerfold. And
exactly.
So
exactly.
This would peak at only number 39, but it's still a favorite of classic rock.
Oh,
it's a
absolutely.
Good party
yeah.
tune, isn't it?
Definitely.
Day After Day, this song made it to number 4, Badfinger's highest charting hit, started out in this week in 1971 at number 74.
Yeah, that's a really good tune.
Let's Stay Together, Al Green, talk about a smooth song. Future number one and is only number one. Frankie, it started out at number 68 that week.
Okay.
And remember this song, I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing by the New Seekers? Remember the Coke commercial?
The New Seekers, yeah. Not to be confused with the Seekers.
With the old Seekers.
Georgie Girl group.
That's right. I kind of like the Seekers, the New Seekers. The Coke commercial was fun.
It was a tolerable commercial, as funny as that is to say that. It was actually on quite a bit, but it was one that you could tolerate.
Yeah.
It was fun.
And for those of you who are Mad Men fans like I am, that was the end of the movie, the end of the 7-8 year run of it.
There you go.
That was number 7 hit, their highest charting song, and it started out at number 61, the highest charting new song of the week.
Nice.
Great start then. ... One of my favorite groups, duos, the Brothers Johnson. Frankie, what do you have on them?
Yeah, this is a good one. Usually in the rock world, I would say, well, they weren't brothers and their name weren't Johnson. Well, but the Brothers Johnson were an American funk and R&B band consisting of musicians and brothers, George Lightning Licks and Louis Thunder Thumbs Johnson. And what a start they had. They achieved their greatest success from 1976 to 1980 with 3 singles topping the R&B charts. Their first single, I'll Be Good to You, peaked at number 3 on the pop charts. But it was their next hit, Strawberry Letter 23, that peaked at number 5 and kind of became their signature song. Only that, it was a breath of fresh air on the R&B charts, where most of their competition had gone down the disco rabbit. Another top 10 hit, Stomp, was spawned from their fourth consecutive platinum album, Light Up the Night, which also peaked at number 5 on the album chart. That they could do no wrong. But then they made a huge change. You see, the first four albums were produced by a gentleman by the name of Quincy Jones. Their next album, they would produce themselves. Well, it was a disaster with no hit singles. Oh. It was dead on arrival on the album chart. There would be two more albums, but sadly, no more successes. They did record some solo work and had a few reunions, but their biggest post-Brothers success was on another Quincy Jones project. Lewis famously played bass on the Thriller album, including the legendary bass line to Billie Jean.
Oh, I didn't know that. Isn't that's that so cool. Yeah. Awesome.
So he had that thing, but then again, it was with Quincy Jones. For some reason, they decided they were going to produce it themselves, probably to save some money. Yeah. I mean, I'm figuring. They probably said, well, you know, we've watched them do this 4 times. We've got this now.
Then Quincy had him back for Thriller, though,
he
didn't
did. He? So, he, no. did have, he did bring them in to do some of the studio work. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he got to play that famous bass line that we all know.
Yeah, boy, I love that song. And I like Stomp from 1980.
Yeah.
And Strawberry Letter 23.
Absolutely. Great tunes, great stuff. And sad to see them leave because they were so big and suddenly they were gone.
Yeah. Hall of Fame albums, in other words, you know, Frankie, albums who belong in the Hall of Fame, even though the artist who did them isn't.
Right.
You've got one, don't you?
I do. It's called Performance, Rockin' the Fillmore by Humble Pie. By now, it's obvious that I was in love with the very 70s phenomenon, the double album live set. First, there were two records, and it usually cost just a little bit more than a single LP, so more music for my money. Second, they were normally played their best tunes, so it was kind of like a greatest hits set. And finally, you often got new arrangements of songs you kind of thought you knew. In our last episode, I spoke about the Grand Funk Live album. Well, in an incredible coincidence, Humble Pie was the band that opened for them at their legendary Shea Stadium concert.
That's right. They set a record for
exactly.
that at the time. Mm-hmm.
And earlier that summer, they had recorded this album over a series of nights at Bill Graham's famous Fillmore East. In true rock jam style, the entire third side of the album was Muddy Waters' Rolling Stone, Ray Charles' Hallelujah, I Love Her So, Rocks the House, but it is a 9-minute version of Ashford and Simpson's I Don't Need No Doctor that is the perfect finale to the album. And you can hear the blueprint for lead guitarist Peter Frampton's classic Do You Feel Like We Do.
But I want to tell you, we're not out of gas this time. It's really been a gas.
Although the album would go gold and break the band in America, it would be Peter's last recording with Humble Pie. Tensions between he and lead singer Steve Marriott would lead to him leaving the band for a solo career.
Yeah, we talked about that before, and I guess it was time for him to move on. He was probably a little too talented for the band, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, and I think he wanted to go in much, and obviously his solo career is much more pop-oriented than kind of the long 12-minute, jams on Muddy Waters and those kind of things. I think he wanted to write his own music and with more of a pop feel.
Yeah, I mean, A Walk on Gilded Splinters
yes.
started off and ended side two. It was 23 minutes and 25 seconds long.
Exactly. And then so. That's what they, you know, that was kind of their specialty, just long songs with long gaps in the middle so Steve Marriott could talk and so Peter Frampton would have room for guitar solo, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Still like the album, though.
Oh, absolutely. Love it.
It's great for you, yeah. Recorded at the end of May 1971 at the Fillmore East in New York City.
Yeah, the famous Fillmore East.
Mine is one called High Infidelity, REO Speedwagon, 1981.
That's another great one, yeah.
This is another one of the bands like Foreigner, Styx. They realized the power ballad was the way to go, like Journey with Open Arms and Faithfully and others. They realized... if we put out something with a hit-oriented sound like, ooh, Keep on Loving You, maybe that might sell, and boom, did it ever.
Boy, I did it.
You should have seen by the look in my eyes, baby, there was something missing. You should have known by the tone. But you never bled. Instead, you lay still in the grass, all coiled up in the sand. And though I know all about those men, still I don't remember. 'Cause it was us, baby, when.
The ninth studio album. We've talked about this hardworking band from Champaign, Illinois, on the Epic label, and they stuck with them. That's part of the Columbia.
Yeah, amazing that they stuck with them through those first eight, because they were really weren't selling flies.
No, but they were really, really good in concert.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Really good in concert. The power ballads, the way to go, Keep on Loving You, Take It on the Run, Don't Let Them Go, all from the album, which was number one in the States and in Canada. 10-time platinum album. Actually, a number one album for the entire year, 1981.
That's right,
Billboard,
yeah.
Frankie. Mr. Misters, Richard Page, you know, Broken Wings and everything.
Sure.
He provided backing vocals on a few of the hits, including Keep on Loving You, the band's first number one hit.
I didn't realize that.
That, along with Humble Pie and the others we mentioned, should be on the wall at the Hall of Fame, and maybe someday groups like REO Speedwagon and Humble Pie will get in.
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't know anybody who... didn't have that album or later on the CD. The album cover was cool.
Exactly.
It really said everything you needed to know. It was a nice little play on words there, and a lot of cool tunes on that one.
A lot of good tunes, and you know, it was, we've said things like this before, but it was one of those things you could not escape that summer. It was all over the place.
Yeah. All right, Guilty Pleasures, or otherwise known as Guilty Pleasures. Frankie, we won't tell anybody about this one. It's from the Crash Test Dummies.
It's called
I mean, like, not Bop by Hanson?
No, not that one.
Once there was this kid who got into an accident and couldn't come to school, but when he finally came back, his hair had turned from black into bright white. He said that it was from when the cars had smashed so hard. Once there was this girl.
This song was number 15 on VH1's 50 Most Awesomely Bad Songs Ever, named by Rolling Stone as the 15th most annoying song, and ranked number 31 on Blunder's list of the worst 50 songs ever. The Huffington Post Canada ranked this song as number 29 on its 50 worst Canadian songs ever. And my favorite, in a 1994 essay in which he makes the case that modern life is better than life in the past, humorist P.J. O'Rourke wrote, "Even the bad things are better than they used to be. Bad music, for example, has gotten much briefer. Wagner's Ring Cycle takes 4 days to perform, while by the Crash Test Dummies lasts little more than 3 minutes. What could I possibly like about it? Well, singers Brad Roberts' bass voice, alternately singing and humming the words, is kind of perfect. I wouldn't want it on every song, but here it works. It's an odd yet strangely likable tune that actually was nominated for a Grammy Award."
Really?
Pretty incredible, huh?
You know, that song is number one in a number of other countries, number four here in the States.
It sure was, yeah.
And
absolutely.
Guilty Pleasure, like Bop from Hanson.
Exactly. Just a fun song that kind of came out of nowhere. The group kind of came out of nowhere, and to hear it every once in a while is just right.
You'll turn it up, but you're not going to open the windows to let anybody know.
No, and I'm not going to play it, put it on my playlist and play it 14 times.
No,
in a
that's
row,
not like Humble Pie.
No.
Mine is a group that also came out of nowhere, Bay City Rollers. Ooh. Not Saturday Night or Money Honey, but the song that came out in the fall of 1977 made it to number 10, You Made Me Believe in Magic.
I remember that one.
Other big hits, I Only Want to Be With You, is good too. All these hits came in the space of 2 years, so they're going to make our great start then ... category.
Ooh,
sometime.
Yeah, that's a
good
one.
Rollers.
Right.
You Made Me Believe in Magic.
Yeah, and I remember hearing a story about that song where it was so different from their first two hits that they played it kind of secretly for the audience and said, "Guess who this is?" And they stumped everybody by it being the new Bay City Rollers.
Wow. Interesting story, Frankie.
Yeah.
Now we'll listen to it privately in our own. But it is a really good tune. I like that song a lot.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
It's time for One Hit Wonder, and it's Michael Nesmith and the First National Band and Joanne.
Ooh, that's
not the Cool and the Gang Joanne.
Yeah, I remember that.
Number 21 in 1970. Nice little country type song. Frankie had made it to the top 40 charts in the spring of 1970.
Her name was Joanne, and she lived in a meadow by a pond. And she touched me for a moment with a look that spoke to me of her sweet love. Hopeless situation for Joanne and the man and the time that made them both run. She was only a girl, I know that well, but still I could not see. Was much stronger than the love she felt for me. But staying with her and my...
The follow-up song, Silver Moon, didn't do so well. But it almost hit the top 40, made it to number 42 in early 71. Joanne was written by Michael Nesmith and produced by Felton Jarvis, who also worked with artists like Fats Domino, Charlie Pride, Jimmy Dean, Carl Perkins, and Elvis. He would work closely with Elvis from 1966 to 1977.
Wow.
And so Felton also finished a project of Elvis's in 1980 that contained 10 previously recorded songs by the King, matching his original vocals with some new instrumental features and tracks. However, Felton died of a stroke just weeks after its release in December of 1980. So he worked with everybody and
sure,
helped Michael out with this song, Joanne. It remained at a staple of Mike's solo concerts and appeared on all three of his live albums, and I didn't know he had any live albums.
I didn't realize that either, but yeah, I suppose nowadays everyone's got, you know, lots of live albums and lots of things that they can put out, let's put it that way.
Well, we've talked extensively about Mike Nesmith and his work with the Monkees. Of course, he passed away a year ago, almost to the date, and we saw him, my sister and I, at the... He wasn't doing so well. It was early November of 2021 at the MGM. It was a good show, and he still had a really good voice. It was such a good entertainer, too, and he was the cool monkey, the guy with the
stocking hat. Yeah, and he had a kind of a little bit different outlook on life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Artists who debuted at number one or number two, the Partridge Family. Were you a big fan of Keith Partridge? And
you know, I was more of the Monkees' age.
Yeah.
By that time, I was probably as old as...
You were high schooler. You'd moved on.
Yeah, exactly. I was probably close to being as old as...
David Cassidy
and
Barry Williams of Brady Bunch.
And I didn't need to see him. Yeah,
that was more my generation, the 10, 11-year-olds. They made the cover of Tiger Beat in 16.
Oh, yeah, that was huge. Yeah, that and, like you said, the Brady Bunch and those kids.
Yeah, that was more our generation, which at the time when you're 14 versus 10, that's a whole generation.
Well, yeah, it's a huge difference.
Partridge Family's I Think I Love You, a great skating song, just ask my wife. Number one the week of November 30th, 1970. It spent 3 weeks at the top, holding off Tears of a Clown, which would eventually make its way to number one for a couple weeks itself.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right in the middle of a good dream, like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you.
I love you.
This morning I woke up with this feeling I didn't know how to deal with. And so I just decided to myself, I'd hide it to myself and never talk about it. And did not go and shout it when you walked into the room. I think I love you. I think I love you. So what am I so afraid of? I
So they debuted at number one, and a lot of artists didn't.
No, a lot of artists never made it, but thank God the Partridge Family did.
Yes, they have that to celebrate. Time for Frankie names his three best albums in no particular order. This could be a tough one, Frankie.
Yes.
Bruce Springsteen, The Boss.
Well, and it was. Two things. First, you'll note that I added the E Street Band.
Right.
At the height of their power, they were perhaps the second greatest rock and roll band in the world. And, yes, there's No Born in the USA, one of the biggest selling albums of all time, and No Darkness on You to Town, the album that I said you should start your Bruce record collection with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a pretty deep discography. So let's start with The Wild, The Innocent, and The East Street Shuffle.
Good place to start, Frankie.
His most fun and joyful album, and also his most jazz influenced. It's impossible to believe that it was totally ignored in 1973 when it was first released. It peaked at number 59 on the Billboard chart and received almost no airplay outside of Jersey and Northeast Ohio. The second side, the three-song New York Trilogy, is one of the best album sides ever recorded. Next one, Born to Run, which was the next album. The band's future with Columbia Records was on the line when they shocked the world with this incredible album. Eight beautiful songs, not a weak one in the bunch, took this to number three, and it has since gone seven times platinum. Months after the release, Bruce was on the cover of Time and Newsweek magazines in the same week.
Mm-hmm.
Final one I'm going to say, The River. The sprawling two-record set was the band's very first of what are now 11 number one albums. And it also spawned their first top 10 single, Hungry Heart. But most importantly, it provided the blueprint to one of the greatest rock tours in history, the year-long River World Tour. And it was July of 1981 when I saw it. To this day, the best concert I've ever seen.
Even better than Peter Gabriel?
Even better.
Rock releases, Frankie, week of December 5th, 1969, Stones and Let It Bleed.
Ooh, that's a great album. Wow.
Band on the Run, Paul McCartney and Wings, 1973,
yeah, absolutely.
Another good one. Jackson Browne's Running on Empty, December 6, 1977. Beggar's Banquet, The Stones, 1968. Mr. Fantasy, Traffic, a year earlier. For Once in My Life, Stevie Wonder, 68. BTO, Bachman Turner Overdrive 2, 1974.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff there.
How about this one? Hotel California, The Eagles, December 8, 1976.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can see how a lot of times they must have been loading these things in for the holiday rush.
Yeah.
Some great albums there, and I'm sure a lot that ended up under the Christmas tree.
I'm sure there were, and there are new albums, too, and not the compilation Greatest Hits or even live stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A Day at the Races, Queen, that's their follow-up to Night at the Opera.
Night at the Opera, yeah.
Wings Over America, that was a good album. The Wings Live Tour, 1976. Blood, Sweat, and Tears, their debut album, 1968.
That's
December
right.
11th. Good stuff coming out that week. Featured artist Frankie Aerosmith, another Boston band. We've already talked about Jay Giles and Boston.
That's right, yeah.
And now Aerosmith, inducted in 2001 at the Hall of Fame by Kid Rock. Inductees that night, Michael Jackson, Queen, Paul Simon, Richie Valens, and Steely Dan. Good class.
Ooh, wow, yeah, very good class.
This group, very deserving, Steven Tyler. His daughter is actress Liv Tyler, you know.
Yeah.
She was in That Thing You Do and Armageddon, which earned $550 million at the box office. Frankie. Joe Perry, now their relationship's been hot and cold over the years, you know.
Yep,
absolutely,
as so many of the lead singer, lead guitarist things have been through history.
Songwriters.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gets a little ruffled around the edges.
Absolutely.
Joey Kramer, Brad Whitford, and Tom Hamilton, not the play-by-play guy. For the tour. They spent a long, long time at the Park MGM Casino, which used to be the Monte Carlo, by the way.
Oh,
they refurbished it in Vegas. Deuces are wild. You know, play on words there. Since mid-September 22, had to take a little break because of COVID, of course. And the June and July dates had to be canceled there because Steven had checked himself into a rehab facility.
Oh.
So that's kind of the overarching story with them, isn't it?
That, yeah. At this age, to be going into a rehab, I don't get it, yeah.
Formed in Boston in 1970, they started doing a lot of live gigs once their lineup got placed in place. Clive Davis, of course, signed them to Columbia Records.
Of course, Records, yeah.
1972, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry. Primary songwriters, often referred to as the Toxic Twins.
Ooh.
'73's Dream On, first released as a single that year, only made it to number 59, then re-released in 1976, went all the way to number 6.
Mm-hmm.
Get Your Wings, 1974, same old song and dance, Train and kept a rolling, 3-time platinum, I had no idea.
There you go.
Produced by Jack Douglas, who co-produced Double Fantasy.
Yes.
And opened for the Guess Who they did in 1977. The Guess Who was kind of circling the drain then.
Yeah.
Toys in the Attic, 1975, had Walk This Way. That was number 10 in early 77. Sweet Emotion, which is a big favorite of the rock stations.
Right,
number 36
right.
in the Hot 100, but that didn't have the kind of oomph that a lot of other songs did that made it to the top 10 back then, like Saturday Night and Convoy and all those ones.
Exactly. that album, Toys in the Attic, really brought them to the forefront. In fact, I don't think a lot of people knew who they were, even though they'd have Dream On, you know, a little bit. That really broke them.
That did. 2-time platinum album, Toys in the Attic, number 10 in the top 200 chart is where it peaked. Backstroke of love, always hot beneath the covers, still talk to you, my daddy, I say. Said you ain't seen nothing till you're down on a muffin, then you're sure to be changing your ways. I'm at cheerleader, was a real young breed, all the times I can reminisce. All the best things of loving with a sister and a cousin, only started with a little kiss like this. Seesaw swinging with the balls in the school, and your feet flying up in the air. Sing a hey diddle diddle with your kitty in the middle of the swing like it didn't care. So I took a big chance at the high school dance with a missy who was ready to play. She a fool, of course she knew what she was doing, and an old love was here to stay. What she told me to just give me a kiss. Way was covered by the hip-hop group Run DMC in 1986, and they'll be one of our upcoming cover versus cover categories.
Oh, there you go.
Start that up pretty soon, right after the first of the year.
That'll be fun.
Two cover songs face off, and you'll tell me which one you think is better.
Okay.
And in 1977, in March, Back in the Saddle, the title cut, which you still hear on the radio. To me, it's just a little annoying. I like how it ends, though.
I'm back!
Yeah. The track Still, co-written by Perry and Tyler, produced again by Jack Douglas. And then Draw the Line in 1977. They had some hot and cold. You know, you heard about them, then they backed off, kind of like Van Halen kind of did that. You know, you knew they were around. And they were probably touring and whatever.
Right.
But they didn't have the gigantic hits. The single Come Together came out in 78, was released by Aerosmith as a cut from the big album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
That's right. And probably, it could be argued, maybe the best thing off of there, too.
Yeah, the Earth, Wind & Fire one.
The Earth, Wind & Fire, doing Got to Get You Into My Life.
Yeah.
And Aerosmith, and that was about it. The rest of the album was just terrible.
It did no favors to guys like Peter Frampton.
No. That hurt a lot of careers.
Then, in late 70s, drug use and tensions among the band members started to emerge. Kind of cooled off in the 80s, but rebounded in 1987, which, a good year for them. Dude Looks Like a Lady, Angel, hit number 3 in the Hot 100 a few months later. Then the top 10 hits started coming.
Yeah, and it's make no mistake about it. They were dead and buried in the early 80s. I mean, nobody, even their concert tours were not talked about, and they were not known as a great live band because of those problems.
Yeah, other bands had taken over. Bowie, of course, Sting, Duran Duran, and a lot of other groups in the 80s. Love in the Elevator, or in an Elevator.
Yeah.
Janie's Got a Gun.
Yes.
Living on the Edge. Crying. You can hear all these songs.
And they found videos. And
Yep, they did. Then in the fall of 1998, Frankie came, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, from that $550 million movie. You ever see that movie, Armageddon?
Yeah, a few hundred times.
Even when I dream of you, the sweetest dream will never
It went to number one. They're only number one. But then they moved into the 90s with that song. But before that, mid-90s and early 2000s, Get a Grip, seven-time platinum album.
Yeah, exactly.
Living on the Edge and Crazy and Crying. Nine Lives had I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Just Push Play. I like Jaded. That's a cool song, isn't
sure.
it? They do have some really good tunes, some good hooks, and Steven Tyler's voice is outstanding.
Yeah, and I think at that point in their career, they kind of gained their
footing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were now a well-known for being a good live group, whereas in the early 80s, they were not known for that at all. And now people were actually wanting to go out and see them.
They reinvented themselves a few different times. Joe Perry did not like Just Push Play, the album. He criticized it, saying it was his least favorite album.
Probably didn't like that it was, you know, more popular, more pop-oriented. Yeah.
Yeah. And by then, they didn't really need to pay the bills and whatever. They had firmly cemented their reputation. And
exactly.
With those hits, though, it really also made them a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame group.
Yeah.
As opposed to Jay Giles, who's still waiting to get in.
Exactly.
Did you ever see Aerosmith in concert?
No, I never did. Unusually enough, you would have thought I would have run into him, even at the old rock and roll fest down at the stadium.
Yeah, the World Series.
Yeah, I never saw them.
Yeah, me either. I never really had a big interest to see them either. And they were too big to, say, warm up for a foreigner.
Right, right.
Not big enough to hold their own in like 1984 versus Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, and Billy Idol, and all the other artists that were really making it big in the mid-80s, were
exactly.
they?
And as I mentioned, they were not known as a great live band. And, you know, you've got so much money to spend. You're not going to spend it on a group that people are saying, hey, that's not they're not
yeah,
the best, you know?
Yeah.
I think it would probably have been better to see them, say, in the late 80s, early 90s, but... By that time, I wasn't going to very many concerts, to be honest with you.
Got the kids and the job.
Exactly, yeah.
And some groups, to me, I would just soon put the needle on the record and let it play.
Right.
Or nowadays, just play a few tunes from them and move on to the next artist.
Absolutely.
Some of them are like that. REO Speedwagon, I've seen in concert, but sometimes I'd rather just put on Time for Me to Fly and be done with it.
Right, right. Or, yeah,
I don't know if I want to sit through a whole concert.
Mm-hmm.
38 Special, some of the tees, the terrible tees for you. Now, I like 38 Special, but for you and Thin Lizzy, they'll be a
Thin
great start.
Thin Lizzy, another one, yeah.
I don't know if I can sit through a whole concert of them.
No,
or Nazareth.
I could never have done that, yeah.
Yeah, and Aerosmith, I thought, was in the same vein in the 70s. They had some hits, but they're so overplayed.
Some misses, and yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's Aerosmith, this week's featured artist. Next week, Frank, you were wrapping up season 7 already.
Nice. I like it.
With the look at new wave artists, part 2.
Okay, yeah.
The Pretenders and the Ramones.
Good ones.
The Ramones, not a lot of tunes from the Ramones. They weren't even brothers, really.
No, they exactly. As I was talking before about the Brothers Johnson, normally it's more like the Ramones, where they didn't have anything to do with each other.
But they had some good tunes. And Blitz,
and their names Blitz weren't Ramone.
Right. Joey Ramone, yes. Pretender is also one of my favorite bands, and Chrissy Hynde still remains one of my favorite female artists.
Absolutely.
What a great voice she has.
I agree totally.
So there are featured artists to wrap up season 7, and then we're going to have a couple of highlight reels to round out the year so you can kind of take a break and enjoy the holidays with your family and friends, and tune in to 70s Rock Conversations on the 19th and the 26th. You'll hear highlight reels of this season, which we'll be wrapping up, and then the one before that, season 6.
Gotcha.
So you can kind of catch up and put those in the background while you're decorating and entertaining, right, Frankie?
Exactly.
Because everybody wants to listen to the podcast. It's worldwide. Even folks in Kuwait are listening.
That's right.
And Germany and Japan and all over the world. So we really appreciate that. And happy holidays to you coming up, Frankie.
Absolutely.
It'll be fun
to
see how the rest of this year progresses. And also counting down, starting to count down, our top 10 rockin' Christmas tunes, and we have some new ones this year, don't we?
Absolutely, definitely some new ones.
We'll get to number 10 through number 6, each of us will, starting next week. For Frank Ost, I'm Tim Friedman, and you're listening to 70s Rock Conversations. We'll see you then.